Good afternoon.
Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, good afternoon. Now, Mr. Ellis, I really wanted to engage Mr. Kelman when he was on and welcome him back. I really would have wanted to ask from him, what did his government do for the accident and emergency hospital other than taking it down enough steps backward? Now, what I saw when I was there on Tuesday, first, those conditions can't do anything for the nursing staff, the medical staff, or any kind of staff there. And it's worse for you who are entering the room. Now, at one time, you had each 24-bed ward had extra beds, so when those beds were full, patients who came in, accident and emergency, did not become a ward where you stayed there. You were sent upstairs, and they would bring in extra beds from downstairs in the low ground. Now, sometime back, all that was changed, and the wards at the hospital were supposed to look like...
So what? Let's cut to the chase. So what do you want done now?
No, what I want done, I did comment on it, but I don't only want to make my report to any of the people in the whatever they are in charge and so on and so forth. No. But I would like people out here to know what goes on in there. I know it's not an everyday thing. But pray tell me, why would someone be sitting in a chair from Monday afternoon all day Tuesday and to die at 5:15 minutes after 12 on Tuesday night without being seen by a doctor?
Okay. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, welcome to the program.
Yeah, a very pleasant afternoon to you, Mr. Ellis, and to Mr. Johnson. I guess want to say a few things here, so I guess want Barbadians to understand very carefully the gravity and the nature of what this country is facing right now. Right now, we are trying to save this country from going through what is called a devaluation. Now, I don't know if Barbadians understand the full gravity of what a devaluation means. Now, when you have a devaluation, the economic shock is so horrendous that history has shown us you have then a second devaluation and likely a third one as well, too, based on what we have seen around the world, especially when it comes to these islands that don't have any real resources. Now, imagine if you had a devaluation. What this administration is doing right now is trying to stave off that possibility. Okay? Now, what I'm saying is that when you look at a devaluation, if you have $40,000 in the bank, you can wake up tomorrow more or less and find, or whenever it's enacted, you have half that money. But look at the seismic effect it has on companies and spending and so on.
Are you sure, though, that Barbadians are not aware of that possibility? What makes you believe that you have to convince Barbadians of this particular point?
Well, Mr. Ellis, if you listen more or less very carefully, more or less to how the many callers are calling in, you don't get an impression. That's one point. I want to come back to a point here so very carefully. And Mr. Ellis, I want you to listen to me very carefully.
Okay.
Errol, the right, excellent Errol Waltenbarra, who I would always see as one of the island's greatest sons of the soil. He won an election, I'm just dating back to history, to where we are at. He won an election, and soon after winning that election, imagine you and Mr. Johnson being the founders of Starcom Network, and you have staff, okay, right? And those staff start then to, let's say, see you, David Ellis, who is on the mic right now, who is the leader, right, as a person not competent, and you, one of those or a few of those people, more or less, in your more or less staff, started then to counter your position. They want to come and replace you, okay? But unlike politics, where you have a five-year period where it's an election, you can change, those people can change however they, you have staff that you are stuck with. Now, I'm saying that the moment that happens, right, the degree of respect and support dies. Now, I want to come to this point now. Let's say you have been removed, not that you have died. Now, you have Mr. Johnson came and replaced you. That same energy from the same people as being transcended to him. Let me get to the heart of the point. Errol Waldenbar won the election. And soon after after he won that election, you had members within that party who figured that he was not more or less capable, even at the age where he needed a guest score. Now, the founder of the party. Now, the right excellent Errol Waldenbar saw himself in his mid-60s and still having a lot to give to the party, more or less, and to the country. But you know what? You had members of his cabinet who wanted to remove him. Okay? That created, more or less, quite a bit of stress for him. Okay? We lost him in office. Okay? Now, Sir Lloyd Erskine Staniford came into the presidency.
Sir, I do not know of any major movement to get rid of Mr. Barrow when he was leading the Democratic Labour Party.
Mr. Ellis, some of those members went on, one of those members in particular went on to form his own party. Okay? I think you should be cognizant of that.
My friend, the formation of the party did not arise around the time that Mr. Barrow was leading it.
That came after. Mr. Ellis, I want you to listen to me very carefully.
I'm listening to you carefully, but I can't let you distort history.
Okay. You had a situation where Sir Lloyd Erskine Staniford took office. He took office, and the same energy, the same individuals who more or less was moving that same thing towards the founder of the party was transferred to him. He came down, and he had issues more or less with Angina. He more or less then said, well, look, this is an untenable situation where you cannot have respect, you cannot have communication, you don't have order, you cannot run a country like that. So an election was called. They were faced an election, they lost.
He faced a no-confidence motion, full stop.
Okay. All right, sir.
He lost
it. We had a situation here whereby David Thompson, our next very brilliant son of the soil, he won the election on January 15th.
No. Please. Tell me something. Where are we going with this? Because I don't need, and I am sure that there are a lot. Let me make this point to you. There are a lot of things that have taken place over the years. And some people know about them, but a lot of people may not. It's difficult for us to embark on a history lesson here. Many people are more concerned with contemporary issues. So I want you to tell me, basically, what is the connection between what you're saying now and what is happening in Barbados at the moment, so that we don't get lost, you know?
All right, Mr. Ellis, I'm going to sum up. I'm going to give you my preamble very quickly. History repeated itself more or less in the Democratic Labour Party. And just let me conclude here now at this point in time. All right, the Democratic Labour Party won the election in 2008, on the 15th of January 2008. David Howard Thompson was elected as the Prime Minister. We lost him in October 2010. Okay? Now, when he died, guess like Sir Lloyd Erskine Staniford, Fandel Stroud more or less inherited the prime ministership of this country.
He was chosen. He didn't inherit anything.
All right. Okay. He came in more or less as a senior man, the man who was seen as being the man that was the most stable person to take him. The point I want to raise is this here, right? It's this here. You have a situation whereby there were members within the same party who then still figured that he was not the appropriate person to be at the head. Okay, that happened. Now, you remember there was an uprising. There was a little bit of an issue with the members, more or less, wanted to push a kind of vote or what have you against him. Okay, that died down because one realized then what happened in the Lloyd Erskine Staniford fiasco. Okay, that died down. We went into an election, more or less, the second election, the one that.
My friend.
Wait.
No. Please. You got me in a position where I believe so many other people out there would be feeling the same way. Where are you going with this?
I'm coming to an end here now. I'm just saying to you, right? The last administration that we had is clearly evident. We had a decapitated administration whereby the respect between who was the leader and some of the members was not there. And as a result, you want to know what happened? You had a situation where there was no wrong house. meetings. There was no consequential, more or less, meetings about how different ministries were supposed to function, how they're going to have impacts on each other. Hence, you had a situation whereby all of the measures that were implemented never, more or less, meet the initiative that they were supposed to meet. Hence, we had $9.6 billion in taxes in 9 years and 7 months, okay? And what it did, it brought on, more or less, over 20 downgrades. So I'm just letting us know the history as to where we got. The issue between Fondell Short, more or less, and Sir Lloyd Erskine Sandiford, the two of them go hand in hand. Because when all two of them were at him, you had an internal tribalism whereby people wanted to remove them. That's the point I wanted to really say, okay?
Well, I don't know that the last Democratic Labour Party administration would agree with you that there was this great evidence of somebody trying to unseat Mr. Stewart. There was a talk about an Eagle 11, and that was brushed aside, and Mr. Stewart remained Prime Minister until the very end. Indeed, he went beyond 5 years with an additional 90 days without being challenged by anybody. So I don't know where you're going with that. That don't stand up to scrutiny at all. You may know something that happened behind the scenes that we don't know anything about. But based upon what was visible to members of the public, we don't see what you are talking about at all. This is down to brass tacks.
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. I just want to make a contribution. I'm one of the policy holders for CLECO and British American.
Yeah.
But I will lose both my son and I.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, all the people who policy has matured is who received money so far.
Yeah.
The policies...
Have any of your policies matured?
No.
So you've received no money?
I received no money. And most of the benefits is stripped from the policy. And the policy have an amnesty on them. You cannot touch the policies not to 2022.
Right.
So if you was to get a lump sum and a reduced pension, you cannot take the lump sum. All of those benefits are stripped from the policies. But what amazes is that who still control CLECO and British American Assets? Because the company only bought the portfolio.
Okay, so, and who are these people who would still be in control?
I know that's a question I ask you. Nobody, but I assume, I don't know if the judicial managers is still in control of the assets or who is in control of the assets.
Well, I would have to ask a question about that. That's not something you could venture to try to answer like that. Okay.
Thank you.
But thanks for clarifying the matter of what is the status of those people whose policies have not matured. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. 4341790. Hello. You're on the air? It's now approaching 23 minutes after 12 o'clock. Don't forget that at 12:30 we have the latest. Among the stories we are following in this edition coming up would be that house fire that left about 17 people or so. A fire, maybe more than one house that would have been affected by it. About 17 people were left homeless. And then we had this operation by the police in St. Lucie early this morning. And that too would carry a lot of interest because people would be curious to find out what the police and the soldiers have been able to come up with as a result of that particular operation. Welcome to the program. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hi, good morning. Am I on?
Good afternoon. You're on.
Yes. David, I want to talk a little bit about this situation because it was following the Kavanaugh case so much. I didn't know that they've got plans to bring Uber into Barbados, which is, you know, as far as I understand that there's a move afoot to get Uber to come here.
There's been some talk about Uber, but what are your concerns?
Well, my concern is that, as a taxi driver, that will be the death of taxi driving in Barbados as we know it.
Okay.
Because if we go by previous history, everywhere that Uber goes, it costs destruction to a lot of the establish taxi services.
That may be so, but you know, the ultimate issue is this. What does it do for the traveler? What does it do for the consumer? Does it leave the consumer better off or worse off?
Well, the consumer is but one aspect of the whole scheme of things. This market is small. We have roughly about 3,500 taxis in Barbados. That includes the Zeds and the ZMs that are trying to fight for the same dollar. Our window of opportunity to make a little money in Barbados is very, very small. Our season begins pretty much from November and ends around April. So you have to try to accumulate as much as you can in between that time for, you know, in order to make a living and still have somebody tell you over until the next slow months come. So to come and compound that now with Uber now will be the death of taxis as we know it. So let me give you an example because people are not seeing the bigger picture. If, for argument's sake, I work for a hotel and when the guests come to me and say, how much to Bridgetown? And let's say from my hotel is $40. And they say, okay, no problem, I come back. And they go and they take out their cell phone and they dial for Uber. And their Uber driver tell them the same fare to Bridgetown is $25. Do you think they're going to come back to me? No, of course not. Because at the end of the day, the consumer is always looking for a bargain. Right? So I have not seen any country where Uber operates that it has been good for taxis because they do not deal with taxis at all. So you're talking about a person who could easily have...
Yeah, but you, as you just said to me, you have a duty, I suppose, to defend the interests of the people who are in the taxi business.
I do.
But of course, agreed. I have an interest also in protecting the interests of people who travel. And we have to also come into contact with something called change, technology.
At what price, David?
Well,
at what cost?
The question here right now that we must ask as well is, at what cost are we protecting you? I mean, both sides of this equation have to be looked at.
Unlike the Zellers and the minibuses who can pressure the government and to make sure they get a return on investment, we don't have that luxury. Well, we have to go out there and hustle every day for every dollar.
You can't. You know, one of the things that you have been unable to stop, the number of permits that have been given. Because part of your challenge is if they hadn't given out as many permits, you might not have been facing as much pressure as you face right now.
Absolutely.
That is one change you have not been able to deal with.
But it's not only that.
Tell me.
It's not only that. The permits are that's another issue because everybody gets a permit. Think that, you know, there's a whole set of money in taxi business, so everybody's going to come in. One of the other issues we are facing is competition from even private people. An example, you have people who don't even have a Z or a ZM on their vehicle. But they're transporting people to catamaran cruises to the different attractions in Barbados. And they have taxis all over, some based at hotels. So that's part of the competition. And you also have now where the hired car companies are literally giving away the hired car. You pay less than $200 for a hired car, and for 2 days, then you get the tour there free. How do you compete against that? And so the component now with the Uber that's going to come into Barbados now and destroy the taxi business, how are we going to survive? What are we supposed to do?
All right, if you want to, please come back after the news and let's explore this a little bit more. Thanks. Down to Brass Tacks, good afternoon. We had a taxi driver on earlier complaining about the idea that Barbados would want to embrace Uber. Now, how does Uber work? There's a piece of software that you have on your phone, an application, and you can use that software to summon a taxi, okay? And it allows users to pay an additional booking fee, and they can leave a gratuity through the app as well. Now, UberX provides a private ride in a standard car for up to 4 passengers, and UberXL provides a ride in a large vehicle that can seat up to 6 passengers.
Right.
Yes. So that's
the
idea. Yes, sir.
No. I would like, first of all, for you all to stop calling Uber a taxi. It is not a taxi business, right? The reason why I feel so passionate about this, because in many instances, taxis and taxi drivers are disadvantaged. A case in point, we have to pay double the insurance for anybody else for a regular sized passenger car.
My question to you though is, can you ultimately avoid confronting change with technology going in the direction that it is? How much longer do you believe that the existing taxi business can survive? You believe it has another 10 years, another 20 years? When you look at it, do you believe it is really sustainable on the current course? And you have to take into consideration the fact that we are not making contact with a lot of the changes out there. There's another dimension to all of this. Cities are particularly concerned about pollution. And so in the same way that people are discussing soft drinks and their impact on our health, that's coming too, you know.
Agreed. Okay, well, if you were saying that, all the hoteliers in Barbados could just shut all their properties down and just let Airbnb take over everything else, then, if you're going to say that.
Well, the question.
I have no problem with technology.
Well, let me ask you.
I don't have a problem with change, but at what cost?
Well, the truth, you know full well that every traveler does not want to stay in an Airbnb property. You know that some people love.
Yes, but everybody
everybody don't want to stay in a hotel. There are a lot of people who love to be pampered on a cruise. Absolutely. All right? So it is about diversity. That is what people are talking about. Some people in the hotel business in Barbados want the government to shut out Airbnb altogether. And you have to bear in mind that there are some people who prefer that kind of accommodation.
Yes, no problem, but it must be managed. Just okay. Like everything else, it must be managed.
Yes.
If you let a company, now imagine, people call it a taxi service, the largest taxi service in the world, in inverted commas, and it doesn't own a single vehicle. These are all private. Now, you see, the taxi business, this is our livelihood. This is our career. This is what we do, right? So you can have a situation where a private person, for argument's sake, works in a whatever gas station, supermarket, a teacher, whatever, and then on evenings they decide to come home, just make sure the children, you know, are started out, and then they go on their Uber hunt. And they can make an additional couple of dollars at the expense of a person who's been playing the trade all day, and this is their only livelihood. Okay? So, and like I told you before, like, for argument's sake, if I buy a battery, do you know if I buy a battery for my vehicle? Because it's a taxi, I only have a 12-month replacement guarantee where a private vehicle will have 2 years. So we are disadvantaged in many, many ways, and unfortunately, there's no synergy, so nobody really fights on our behalf.
Well,
right?
let me.
We don't have an organization.
I know you want to avoid the use of the term taxi, but taxi is short for taxi cab, and taxi cab is a car licensed to transport passengers in return for payment of a fare.
Right. Agreed.
It is usually fitted with a taximeter.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if you went by that yardstick.
See, because every jurisdiction
you
will have their own set of rules, right? But what I'm saying, David, the level
I hear what you are. I hear
is much higher.
I hear your concern.
But you may not be able to answer this. But let me ask you one simple question.
Mm.
In the event that an Uber driver, okay, drives, let's say he picks up 2-3 passengers and gets into an accident, and one of those passengers are injured, could be killed, whatever, who stands liability because he is not insured as a taxi, but he's doing taxi work? Who is going to be liable for that?
But you began.
You probably can't answer.
Okay, but you just said that in all of this, it needs to be monitored. And I believe you're also saying it needs to be regulated. So if you're going to allow Uber to come into Barbados on a larger scale or on any scale, one would expect that you would have to be putting measures in place with the whole objective of trying to protect the public against scenarios such as those. There's no reason why...
Yeah, it sounds good in theory, but...
You know full well that they got taxi drivers who may not necessarily be fully insured either. Somebody will want to talk to you on the phone.
Okay.
Hello. Let's take the second caller. Yes, please.
What I would like to ask that taxi driver, what would start him and other members of the organization from forming something like Uber or even joining it. He's talking about he's going to be disadvantaged. What would make him disadvantaged if he joined it?
All right. First of all, from my research, Uber doesn't deal with legitimate taxi. They only deal with private citizens who are willing to come into their organization and drive for them. They don't deal with taxis.
So
secondly, we had a similar organization here in Barbados called BCAB, where you go and you download the app on your smartphone. The difference that between them and Uber is that they use only legitimate taxi services, right? So I mean, sorry, taxi drivers. So if you wanted to join them, you have to have a car or a vehicle, a legitimate taxi in good working order. Then you can join them and you can hail rides just like Uber. That's the difference, right?
So
if you look at Pass the Street, Uber destroys every taxi organization that goes.
So that means the taxi organization need to get together and form association, something like Uber, that will help you all so you all will not be there for a whole day so you all ain't get any work. You all need to get together and find something like that.
There's different aspects to the taxi. Don't just look at in a vacuum. Huh? Some people work in town. Some people work at the airport. Some work in the port. Some people work at hotels. Some work at garages. So there are many different aspects to the taxi business. So you might be judging it just from the guys who work in Bridgetown. But they have to make a living too.
But the problem with Barbadians is they don't like change. Every time something is being introduced into the country, everybody knows why it's not going to work. Nobody looks to see how you can make it work.
No, you know what he is not? And he's admitted basically that that is not his remit. He's focused on the interest of the taxi driver. I've already said the more important issue here is the customer. And how could this change make life better or cheaper for the traveling public? If Uber is going to make that positive difference for people who are moving from point to point, then they are going to invite it into Barbados. As long as there's a value attached to it.
Yes.
And you can't stop that. That's human.
It's going to come.
Yes. And therefore, it's a question of seeing how best you can adjust.
Yes. How they and adapt.
Do you understand that there is only so many people in Barbados available to catch a taxi? Do you understand that?
But that means they have so many taxis.
He knows that. He agrees.
That's a government part. That's a government thing. I can't really get into that. Right? I can't get into that. And there's some people who have 3 and 4 permits.
Taxi, get a private car and join Uber then.
No, that's not my style.
It might be somebody else's style then.
Well, fair enough, but I will fight it, though. Believe it or not, because I'm not going to vote for a government that's going to come put me out of business, so that ain't going to work.
That is the way the country is the way it is today, because you fight everything else to look to see how you can make it work.
Well, no, you see, I have to look up for my interest, right? I have to look up for my own interest, so, you know, you look up for yours, but I'm looking up for mine.
But you know that we are in the era of self-drive vehicles coming at us as well? Yeah, and you know, we sit down here and we say...
the era of a lot of things.
Let me tell you something. It wasn't so long ago... that we were hearing about electric vehicles. They are here now. So trust me, within the next 10 years, don't be surprised if you start to see self-drive vehicles around here too. I don't know how they can deal with all corners and stuff. the cart roads and that sort of stuff. But things are changing. The technology is making a lot of change. And we have to be, first of all, more conscious of what is happening, and then try to understand how best Barbados can adapt. I see the same people who are into Uber, they're also talking about bicycles, into bikes, and things like that. So, you know...
They're into Uber Eats as well, too.
They're into food as well, yes, Uber Eats. All right, thank you very much for calling.
Okay. All right, no problem.
Thanks very much.